From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. For the last few weeks, millions of acres across the United States have been burning. Dozens of large wildfires raging across the West. Some of the biggest are right here where I live. There was even something I'd never heard of, a firenado.
Fires are burning out of control all over California.
Some of the biggest fires in state history.
Nearly 11,000 lightning strikes were reported.
And heavy winds spread flames across the state.
Fast-moving flames raging out of control.
Turning more than 1,500 square miles into an apocalyptic hellscape.
Here in the San Francisco Bay Area, it's like we're living in a ring of fire. Even indoors, you can often smell smoke from nearby fires. And where those fires end up can literally depend on which way the wind blows.
I'm in an area where the fires are burning on three sides, to the north, to the east, and to the south.
That's Danielle Venton from public radio station KQED. These fires have killed at least seven and destroyed thousands of structures across nearly a million acres.
That many really large fires burning simultaneously. That's a new experience for me.
Danielle's a science reporter. She remembers what it was like when she first started covering these massive wildfires in 2015.
When those fires happened, it was felt like, well, where did that come from? Like, that's wild and that's crazy. And then we had bad fires in 2016. And we had bad fires in 2017. And we had bad fires in 2018 and 2019 and 2020.
There are two big reasons why wildfires have become more extreme. First, climate change is making things hotter and drier. And second, wildfires are natural. They're supposed to happen. But for more than 100 years, we've done everything we could to suppress them, battling fires with everything from shovels and bulldozers to helicopters and giant air tankers.
Because fire has been suppressed for so long, vegetation builds up, and that means that there is more to burn. So when fire does hit an area, it burns hotter and it burns out of control.
For decades, we've known that the way we deal with wildfires is wrong.
But change is long and change is hard.
Especially when that change means allowing those smaller fires to burn on a regular basis to get rid of that dense vegetation.
Fire can be good, and low intensity, mid intensity fire protects us from bad, out-of-control fires. The answer to all of this fire is actually more fire.
More fire. Seems like a strange thing to wish for. But it could be our only way out of this catastrophe that we caused.
So this is a human-caused problem, and that means that humans can work to fix it and make it better. And I don't mean that it's going to be easy, and I don't mean that it's going to be quick, but it is possible for us to re-examine how we think of fire, how we treat it, and have a healthier relationship with it.
Today, we're going to look at how some communities are creating that healthier relationship with fire. It's something everyone in the country needs to worry about because wildfires are no longer just a problem in the West. They're moving into suburban communities all over the country. Before we get to that, Danielle searches the past for examples of how the U.S. has dealt with major threats as inspiration for how we can bring about change now.
Let's travel back in time to 1912, to the sinking of the Titanic. Despite the transmission of frantic SOS signals, help could not arrive in time.
From the moment the ship sank, it became clear that there hadn't been provision to save everybody's life on the ship.
Stephen Beale is a historian at Harvard who's written several books about the Titanic. He says the ship makers, from their perspective, took safety seriously.
In fact, exceeded the number of lifeboats that they were required to have.
But that number was based on ship tonnage, not how many people were on board.
And so there was a huge outcry about this, and that's really what led to change.
New safety regulations worldwide within 2 years.
One of the things about the stories of disasters is that we don't want them to be meaningless, right? We want some good to have come from this so that whatever the disaster is will never happen again.
Californians are in a similar moment now. The campfire ripped through the town of Paradise last November. the deadliest fire anywhere in the United States in 100 years. It killed 85 people, more than the Loma Prieta earthquake, and left a path of ash and ruin that shocked people across the state.
It literally looks like a war zone.
Totally scorched hillsides, trees that have fallen over.
Many are asking, can we make sure this doesn't happen again?
Well, that's a challenge because, you know, there's at least 100 paradises out there.
Scott Stevens is a fire science professor at UC Berkeley. He says millions of people in the state live close to wildlands.
There's so many smaller towns, a lot of small towns all over Southern California, Northern California, where we have these conditions. We have conditions of high fuel loads, very difficult ways to get in and out of communities.
Fire has always been part of California, but the state is experiencing increasingly deadly and catastrophic fires. 2017 was the worst year on record until the fires of 2018.
Does it have to be this way?
No, it could be better.
Californians could have safer homes, healthier forests, cleaner air, even in the face of unpredictable wildfires.
I mean, if this became a priority enough for health, you know, for our kids and our grandkids and everybody else, it would just happen, right? It's not like something that's impossible.
But it does mean asking tough questions about how we live in this state. Questions such as, are there places where we shouldn't rebuild? Do we fine homeowners who don't clear vegetation? And can we agree on how to manage forests? Grappling with these questions will call on Californians to evaluate competing priorities. But we've done it before. Think about what it was like to be in a restaurant before public smoking bans.
People simply took it for granted that the indoor spaces were going to be contaminated with tobacco smoke.
James Rapace is an anti-smoking advocate who helped get some of the first non-smoking bills passed in the late 1970s. He says, at the time, the thought of telling people they couldn't smoke wherever they liked was unthinkable. That started to shift when public information campaigns taught people about the dangers of breathing tobacco smoke.
Why do people smoke, Yogi?
According to statistics, they'd be better off if they didn't.
Why don't they quit?
You might have the right to smoke, but you don't have the right to let your smoke make other people sick. And so it's a hierarchy of needs.
Everyone's need for health triumphs over some people's need to smoke. Slowly, through grassroots pressure and political will, today there is less heart and respiratory disease.
So it did take a generation. But with respect to the climate issues, we don't have a generation. Time is running out.
Climate change is already making our fires more destructive. But it's not the first time humans have tackled an ecological crisis after the damage began.
Ozone Hole, how we save the planet. Wednesday,
the Environmental Protection Agency is tackling the acid rain problem with new rules.
We improved food safety, banned leaded gasoline, and cleaned up polluted rivers. Scott Stevens thinks Californians can do it again with wildfire.
There really is hope in this state. There's hope for our ecosystems to be more fire resilient, better adapted to climate change. So I think there really is hope, and there is a way to step forward.
In the case of the Titanic, change happened because people wanted to stop that kind of disaster from happening again. In the case of smoking bans, people re-examined their values. Drew Dellinger is an author who studies the civil rights movement. He says, to move society in new directions, people also need to picture what the future could be.
I mean, if you think of Martin Luther King, the speech that he gave after the first successful day of the bus boycott, he said, there will come a time in the future where people will look back and they'll say that there lived a group of people who were willing to stand up and inject new meaning into the veins of civilization. So it requires a sense of imagination and possibility and what can be.
Can we imagine a California where we're unlikely to lose entire towns? Where fire is not a force that destroys neighborhoods. It's a tool to keep forests healthy. Scott Stevens says it's about reframing a fundamental relationship.
It's going to become really people and the land. It really is that simple. You know, people and the land. Can they work together?
Ultimately, Stevens says, whatever is good for the land we live on will be good for us. It's a simple idea, but working with fire and working with land requires a radical rethinking of how we build and how we live together.
That's Danielle Venton, science reporter for KQED in San Francisco. From here, we go inside a wildfire that forced evacuations from 10,000 homes.
We've got flames on either side of the road, including up on the ridgeline. I can see the fire torching through some larger brush about 50 feet away. And I should feel the heat on my face from the hillside that's burning next to me. Woo-wee.
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Support for Reveal comes from LegalZoom. During these unprecedented times, LegalZoom is available for legal help, taking care of the things you need to get done without having to leave your home. More info at LegalZoom.com.